This is Business Rockstars. My guest today is Carrie Cramp, CEO of Sizzler USA. Carrie, thanks so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
So for those who are not familiar with Sizzler, can you give us a little background on
your
company? Sure.
Sizzler is one of America's original steakhouses. It got its name for the founder when he first put steaks on a grill. He'd hear the sizzle sound and thought, what an incredible name to go with an incredible sound. They kind of highlighted what we're all about. The Sizzler concept is really designed to be an opportunity for community to get together, family to get together to have a great meal. It's also been a place where a lot of people's first jobs came from. So not only did we participate in introducing steaks to the whole industry, but we also allowed people to have a lot of first jobs as well. So a lot of people that I meet along the way either tell me about, hey, I went to Sizzler with my grandparents or my parents, or it was my first job. So it's really kind of cool to have that kind of a connection with consumers in a bunch of different ways.
Absolutely. And what is your role as CEO? And what's the most exciting thing about being the CEO of Sizzler?
Well, I think what I get an opportunity to do every day is just to help empower people to do and be the best that they can be. So that's the fun part about the job. There's this typical CEO things that you have to do, the administrative things. But where I really get my energy and my passion is going out into the restaurants, being in the kitchens when people are doing the prep work, and being out in the dining room or taking care of guests. So I guess my job is to kind of be a cheerleader in some respects, to be out there acknowledging and recognizing the job that our crew does, and then also being a face of Sizzler to the guests and really listening to them, finding out how we're doing, are there things that we can do differently in order to be able to stay relevant in their lives. There's a lot of choices out there for people. So our goal is to stay relevant, but stay true to kind of who Sizzler is and what we've been known for 60 years.
Absolutely. And Sizzler started as a small converted office trailer and turned into a family steakhouse. You're now operating 131 locations throughout the U.S. What has been the biggest challenge you faced as Sizzler continues to grow?
Sure. I think the hard part a little bit is staying relevant to the original intent. So Del Johnson created this concept because he wanted to let people have the opportunity to get out of their homes and go have a dining experience somewhere. And he thought that having a great steak meal kind of in a community location was a good thing. So I think that's the core of what started us. So it's tempting to want to change and be something different over the period of time, but staying true to what you really were in the beginning, while at the same time staying relevant. So we added a salad bar about 40 years ago because we thought that we needed more of a complement to the steaks besides just a steak and a great baked potato. And since then, we've added shrimp and salmon and ribs and some other things to the menu. So I think the biggest challenge is to try to stay true to who you were in the original days and why you were created, and then also try to stay very relevant to the changing consumer tastes that are prevalent today.
Absolutely. And how important is Sizzler's connection with the consumer, and how are you adapting your business to the changing consumer?
Yeah, it's critical. It's absolutely critical. I think that we need to stay connected with them. The consumers not only age differently, so we have the generation baby boomers to generation X and Z and millennials, and we have names for all the different categories of guests, and all their preferences change. So we have to figure out how we stay true to the people who were, you know, have been coming to Sizzler for years, and yet appeal to new groups of people that want to have food like we'd like to be able to deliver to them. So we've done a lot working on adapting not only just the basic core foods we have and the offerings we have, but even looking at craveability, you know, new seasonings, new flavorings, new products. And then there's also, you know, looking for sustainability, looking for all natural, looking for ways that we can stay relevant to the way people want to eat. And then the biggest thing we've seen is people want to customize. So our whole intent is to find ways that you can come in and then basically build your own meal, whether that's a steak and a baked potato, or whether it's salmon with vegetables, a salad that you can either indulge in and put blue cheese over the top of it, or a healthy salad. So try to stay relevant to the consumers and then make changes based on how they basically want us to be able to deliver that experience to them.
And are you always trying to innovate, or would you say that consistency is kind of key to your success?
Yeah, beautiful double-edged sword, because yeah. I think you want to be innovative so that you can appeal to people. But if you're innovative and people can't depend on you and you lose that consistency, then you kind of fail. And I think that's the biggest challenge today, is how do you stretch the limits a little bit to allow people to have new flavors, new ways to eat. And there's always an evolution of the way people want to experience you. So we've been fast casual our whole existence. So when you come in, there's a menu board. You see the menu board, figure out what you want to eat. You pay at the cash register. And then basically at that point, you're free to either help yourself to salad and soup and a sundae or wait for your entree to be delivered to you. So I think you need to be able to deliver that experience in a consistent basis so that you're dependable. So when people come in, they know the steak's going to be cooked right. They know the baked potato is going to be absolutely perfect and the salad's going to be fresh. But at the same time, you have to have a little twist. So we kind of try to take the familiar and add a little twist to it so that people still feel like there's a new way to be able to experience Sizzler, but depend on the consistency that we've delivered all these years.
Absolutely. And Sizzler is multi-generational culture, meaning that people stay with you guys for a long time. What do you attribute your company culture success to?
Well, it's a part that I fell in love with Sizzler about was I'd meet employees who'd been with the company for 25 or 30 years. And not only that, which is a little bit surprising in an industry where going from job to job is so prevalent. But then they'd say, oh, by the way, my sister works at the other restaurant and my daughter's getting ready. She's almost old enough to start working for us. So it's what's interesting, I think, is people look for a place where they get acknowledged, they get rewarded, recognized, they have a fulfilling job. And so when you think about how much time you spend at your job, if we can create an environment where they really are thrilled to come to work, almost feel bad about leaving, although we want them to leave to go be with their families, and then their families can see that and understand that, hey, you really like your job, don't you? Then it's easy to attract them to come into the system. And Sizzler's history has been that way, where we've been able to really have not only just friends and family continue to work, but then people that meet them on the street that they don't know and say, wow, you look really happy. You must really love your job. And so that's a great way to do recruiting. And we've been very successful at that as well.
And what would you say your management style is like? And would you want to work for you?
I guess I love people and I love food. So I like hanging around with people that love people and love food. So we don't really work for each other. It's kind of an interesting environment. My job is to support people. I'm a servant leader. My job is to make sure that you have all the tools you need and the opportunity to do a phenomenal job. If I do that every day, then you're going to work really hard. So yeah, if I had somebody, which I do, and I've had in my career, people that said, hey, I really have an interest in you and I want you to be successful. How could you not want to work with somebody like that? So that's what my goal and objective is, to try to be that same way.
Absolutely. And the restaurant business is a competitive space. What are you guys doing to stay ahead of the competition?
I think the biggest part for us is we need to stay relevant in a number of different ways. And so you need to be relevant on some of the things we talked about, being innovative, being creative. But affordability and value have taken a different place in our lives, I guess. So if we have steak and lobster for $22.99, that is a phenomenal value. But if you only have $10 in your pocket, it's an irrelevant value. So affordability plays an important part also. So we try to have kind of a barbell approach to our menu. So if you don't have a lot of money, come to us because we have great food for that. If you have a lot of money and you want to indulge and you really want to have a great experience, you want to have a glass of wine and soup and salad and you want to have steak and lobster, we're the perfect place to come. So I think our full approach has been to try to be available to anybody to come and have an experience with us, no matter how much money they have in their pocket, and then be able to execute that experience every time that they come in.
Absolutely. And what advice would you give to entrepreneurs who are looking to break into the restaurant space?
Man, you got to love food and you got to love people. It's what's funny about our business is you work when everyone else plays, which is why people go out to eat. They usually go out to eat to be able to have a great time. So you have to really have kind of a hospitality service attitude that you really want to be there to please people and to make them happy. So the restaurant business is centered around food and execution of that food, you know, to the perfect degree. And then the hospitality to have fun with that. So I think the basic core thing, we can find people that are happy and teach them the restaurant business, but we can't teach people that aren't happy to be happy.
Right.
So our biggest challenge is to find people that really love the industry. And so if you love the industry, there's a lot of opportunity. Find a niche that's not filled. When days get long and it's a tough job, if you love what you do, you kind of motor through that. If you don't love what you do and the days get long, the days get long. And yeah. So I think the big thing is to really have a passion for serving people, being around food, being around people that love food and people. And then you don't even really work a day in your life. It's all fun every day.
That's great advice. Don't go anywhere. This is Business Rockstars. This is Carrie Cramp, the CEO of Sizzler USA. We'll be back in a moment.
Is your body language making you look arrogant? I'm Alex Worley with the Business Rockstars Minute. There is a fine line between being cocky and confident. Believe it or not, body language can send cues to others about you and your personality. Are you sending the wrong messages? The following are some nonverbal cues that leave you looking arrogant to your team. Number one, avoiding eye contact. It makes you look uninterested or unwilling to participate in the conversation. Number two, crossing your arms. This stance closes you off from others and can make you look inaccessible. Number three, forgetting about your facial expressions. Remember, you don't want to lack confidence or seem unengaged. Avoid the arrogance gap. A simple tweak of your mannerism can make you appear more confident or even be more confident. I'm Alex Worley, and this has been a Business Rockstars Minute.
Newsmax, you like Newsmax. I like it too. Yeah, I like it too.
President Trump is right. Watch Newsmax TV and bypass the big bad media. Get the truth about Trump with Mike Regan, Alan Dershowitz, David Horowitz, Jesse Lee Peterson, Brett Winterbill, and many more. Newsmax TV, America's fastest growing news channel, is now on DirecTV 349, Dish 216, UVerse 1220, and Fios 615. If your cable system doesn't carry it, call them. Tell them you want unbiased news. You want Newsmax TV.
Hey, I just heard that people at my friend's company got sextortion emails.
Yeah, it's a popular type of spear phishing attack.
Wow, that sounds serious.
It is. Scammers claim to have a compromising video of the victim and threaten to share it with their contact list unless they pay a ransom.
What if they target someone at our company?
We're secured with Barracuda Sentinel. It uses artificial intelligence to block spear phishing attacks, including sextortion emails.
That's a relief.
Protect your business at Barracuda.com. Barracuda, your journey secured.
This is Business Rockstars, and we are back with my wonderful guest, Carrie Cramp, CEO of Sizzler USA. Carrie, thanks so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
So for those who missed the first half of the segment, can you explain what Sizzler is?
Yeah, it's actually an interesting concept. It was designed as fast casual before there was fast casual. So when you come in the door, we have all of our menu on a board in the entryway so that you can see exactly what we have. The highlight of our restaurant is the salad bar, which is in kind of in the middle of the restaurant. So as you're peering across the dining room, you can see this beautiful salad bar with fresh ingredients there. So you go to the cash register, and then our cashiers really are designed as being your Sherpa. They're the ones that take you through your experience and explain to you what Sizzler's all about. So if you've missed something, a lot of people kind of, when they're in a line and they see people behind them, they default to the salad bar. So their job is to really say, by the way, just so you know, we have chicken and salmon and we've got shrimp and we've got these incredible steaks. And then also we have kind of a motto where if you come in and if you don't want mushrooms and onion on your steak and I kind of push you into doing that and you didn't want them, you kind of feel like, hey, I didn't get a great experience here. But if you did want mushrooms and onions and I didn't offer those to you, then you'd feel bad, like, oh, I wish I could have put mushrooms and onions on my steak. So we try to teach the cashiers to be able to read people, to try to understand how to make sure that whatever they wanted, it doesn't matter what they want, we just want to make sure that they understand their options and then really have an experience that they totally enjoy. So that's kind of our goal.
And you guys have a new little twist on your salad. Tell me about that.
Yeah, we've added a mix station. So traditionally, you can go and get salad ingredients, and you go to the dressings, and you put the dressings over the top, and then you kind of push the food around so that it gets absorbed in all the dressings. So we have a mix station where you actually take those ingredients over to someone that we kind of call internally a saladista, who's there really to help you enhance your salad. So we'll have things like artichoke hearts and Kalamata olives and avocado, and then we have some different dressings that you can kind of fuse some flavors together. So you've picked out the ingredients that you love, you bring it to that person, they add a few extra ingredients, they mix that all together, and then on a beautiful refrigerated plate, they hand that back to you. So you have this gourmet salad that you actually created, and people seem to really love the flavor profiles that come out in that. So all of a sudden, they feel very proud of the fact that I created this beautiful. We actually loved it so much, we had Instagram pictures. So you'd take a picture of your salad, and we had a digital board next to there where it would go up to it, so we could get people to Instagram their salad. So it's kind of a cool engagement with our guests. So that's kind of a twist of some of the things we're trying to do with our restaurant.
And the refrigerated plate is key.
It is, because when you get that, it's like, wow, this is really cool. So yeah, it's an important part of that experience.
What trends do you see in the restaurant industry in the next 5 years?
I think the biggest thing for us, and it's a little crazy how it's changed, but convenience. So convenience used to be 5 minutes from here, I have a restaurant, that's convenience. Convenience used to be I can go in and I can really readily understand the menu and how to place my order. So those are all things that everyone, I think, has been, you know, working on to make sure we can execute well. But now it's a new convenience, because with third-party delivery, you know, if you're sitting at home and you've got, you know, Netflix just came out with the latest, you know, show that you got to watch all 8 episodes tonight and you don't want to leave your seat, we have to be able to connect with you and be able to deliver food to you. So I think the consumers want convenience in a number of different ways. So that's been our biggest focus today, is how do we make sure that with the limited time we have engaging with you, we provide you the best food we possibly can in the kind of format that you want it to be, whether you want to eat it at home or whether you want to eat it fast and run, or whether you want a really relaxing experience. Whatever your definition of convenience is, part of that experience that we're trying to deliver. Cravability is always important. Healthfulness, mm-hmm, always important. So those are kind of the entry to the game. You have to be those things. But convenience seems to be the newest buzzword, because everybody wants to get more out of the time that they have. So finding ways to be convenient for that experience is a big trend.
That's so true. And you've been the CEO of Sizzler for 13 mm-hmm years. What has been the biggest lesson you've learned as you've grown Sizzler?
I think it's probably to focus on making sure that we still execute what we intended to execute. The biggest learning I got was I wear my Sizzler logo everywhere I go. Mm-hmm. And people will come up and go, hey, I love Sizzler. Let me tell you my story. And they'll tell me the whole story about their fathers and grandfathers and all the things they've done. And then I'll say, well, when was the last time you were there? Oh, I don't go to Sizzler anymore. And I go, what do you mean you don't go to Sizzler? And then I tell them what we're doing. They go, oh my God, I've got to go to Sizzler. So it's this disconnect of, we've been around for 60 years. People are very familiar with us. So they're very comfortable being able to come to us, but then they kind of forget about us. Because unless you're kind of on their radar screen, you don't always get noticed. And it's like a nice pair of jeans. You'd feel comfortable wearing it, you just don't wear them that often. So our job is to kind of re-engage people again and inform them about what we're doing. So I think our biggest learning was that we have a great reputation. People know who Sizzler is, but we need to re-engage with people so that they give us another shot. If we get them back in the door again, we own them again. They're good for another 60 years. So yeah, our job is to kind of re-engage with them again and get them involved in our restaurants, and then they fall in love with us again.
And are you using social media to engage with prospective customers, or is social media not as important?
No, it's huge. And it's interesting. About 4 or 5 years ago, a bunch of baby boomers were sitting around saying, hey, how do we use social media and what should we do with it? And so we said, why don't we get some millennials that already know how to do that? So we actually brought on board some millennials in our marketing department and our IT department. And the things that we were struggling with, like, how are we going to do Instagram? Like, are you kidding me? We just do Instagram. You don't like sit and talk about doing it. You just do it. And so social media has transformed, I think, the way we do. I mean, everybody carries their computer is now their telephone, which isn't a telephone. It's really a walking computer that sometimes you make calls on. So we engage in social media in all aspects. We think that that's probably a way to more effectively reach consumers today, because they're not really sitting at home watching ABC and NBC. And
right,
so TV's great. It'll always be the mass media. But there's so many ways that you can really pinpoint exactly the target audience that you want and then get messages to people that want the messages. There's nothing worse than hearing from somebody that you don't want to hear from.
Right.
But there's also nothing worse than missing an opportunity to hear from somebody that you do. So our goal is to be present when you want us to be present, so we give you a reminder that, hey, you ought to come in and have a meal at Sizzler because we're waiting for you.
I think I need some cheese toast later.
I think so.
And what is the number one thing that sets Sizzler apart from other franchises?
I think what's interesting, we're still evolving the brand. So, mm-hmm, and I say that 60 years old, it's kind of hard to say you're still evolving, but we're still changing and trying to adapt to different consumers. And so our franchisees that come on board aren't told, listen, here's the way you have to do things. things. It's black and white. You can only do it this way. So I think the ability to be able to engage with us, we listen to them. There's a lot of really good information, good ideas coming up from our franchisees. They're not all good ideas, but there's a lot of good ideas that come from our franchisees. So I think being involved with our franchise to be able to really have a say in how it's run and what goes on, and for us to be really intent on listening to what they want to contribute, makes us a great franchise.
If you could go back in time and give yourself one piece of advice before starting to be the CEO of Sizzler, what would you tell yourself?
I think probably enjoy the journey, because we all have this destination, like, I can't wait to get to this point, or I can't wait for this to happen. And then you pass by all the really cool stuff along the way. So I think it's to slow down a little bit, to enjoy the journey. We have a deal. We talk about table touches. So when the managers are out in the dining room, they're supposed to touch the tables. And some people take it literally that they literally go and touch the tables. But the reality is to really engage with the guests. So it's one thing to come up and say, how was everything? And then walk away to the next. You don't really expect an answer.
Right.
You just want to go to the next person. So I think if you stop and really engage with somebody and say, hey, how was your meal? And I noticed you really love that, or you order that, or how many times you've been here, or how'd you hear about us? So that level of engagement with the consumers, to let them talk to us and give us feedback on what's going on and be able to enjoy the time that we have together, that's part of that journey that makes this all fulfilling. So at the end of the night, you can think, man, I really made a lot of people happy today.
Well, I'm excited to see where Sizzler is in the next 5 years, and I'm definitely going to go have myself some cheese toast.
Great deal.
Later for lunch. Carrie, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
This is Business Rockstars, and that was my wonderful guest, Carrie Cramp, CEO of Sizzler USA.
This report is brought to you by Bank of America. Hispanic entrepreneurs are confident about their 2019 business outlook, according to the 2019 Bank of America Hispanic Small Business Owner Spotlight. A strong majority are planning for increased revenue, expansion, and long-term growth. However, low unemployment is creating obstacles for Hispanic business owners looking to recruit and retain talent. Elizabeth Romero, Small Business Executive at Bank of America.
Hispanic entrepreneurs are embracing a more confident outlook toward growth compared to their non-Hispanic peers. However, the ultra-competitive labor market has made hiring and retaining employees a significant challenge.
Optimism is also paving the way for future generations of Hispanic business owners. 34% of Hispanic entrepreneurs say their business has grown beyond their original vision, and 38% plan to pass their business on to their children. For more information, visit newsroom.bankofamerica.com.
Hey.
We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars. Joining us right now is Brandon T. Adams and Greg Rillette. They're the co-hosts of Ambitious Adventures. Guys, good to have you back. Give us a quick recap. What's your show about?
Yeah, so what we really wanted to do was, we both love traveling. We're both young guys, and we wanted to continue to see the world, but we didn't want to just see the taco stand and the barbecue joint, the hamburger place. We wanted to see the people who are really building the communities, and we really believe that it's the young entrepreneurs, the guy risking it to put the brewery at the corner, or the yarn store, or the fashion boutique, or the you know, whatever it is. And so we wanted to turn the cameras on and see how they're building their communities, and that's what Ambitious Adventures is all about.
What do you think has been the hardest part about getting that started? There's so many people out there that... they have a story, they have a message, they have a product or an offer, they have a dream and a vision, but I feel like a lot of people struggle either because of fear or lack of resources, limiting beliefs, self-doubts. What is it, you know, really separated you guys from that to being able to get started?
We made a step forward. I mean, we just did it. Like, we didn't always do everything.
So there's no secret sauce?
There's like, we just stepped forward and we made mistakes along the way. I mean, there were some things we didn't do right, but we learned, we made pivots, and then... I mean, now we already got a distribution deal and everything else.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, you start to figure it out as you go, right? Yeah. So, like, if I told you I had all the answers to what we're doing, like, I have no clue,
we're
right?
We're still learning.
We're still learning. But I think it, you know, the first, so I shot the pilot by myself in St. Pete before I had met Brandon, and we got the footage back, and we're like, we bombed this. Like, we did not, conceptually, I think we got it, but we don't have, so I went out and I found a scriptwriter. I found a scriptwriter in Hollywood who writes reality shows, and I'm paying her a lot of money, but it made the Des Moines episode so much better because now we had cohesive scripts and stuff. Yeah. Then it was like on the editing side, all right, so it looks a little too documentary style. Now we need to make it a little more reality style. And so it's figuring out as you go, but you can't figure it out if you never shot the first episode, if you never went out. The other thing that I think is really key is the people around you. So the people around you as an entrepreneur make you more successful than you would be yourself, your team.
Yes.
How important is our crew?
Well, like our crew alone, I mean, the camera guys make it. I mean, we always say, like, we laugh, we're just guys in front of the camera. You're the ones actually making us look good.
Yeah.
And then the people around us that help spread the word. I mean, people believe in our vision. And if you find people that believe in what you're doing, you build a great team, that's how you go far. And that's how we've been able to do. I mean, you and I are just a small part of what we're doing with Ambitious Adventures.
Yeah. And I think that the team is really crucial. The second thing we talked about in the last segment was get to market fast with a product.
Yeah.
So when we went on Kickstarter, we had an actual product to sell. It wasn't just selling air, like back Greg and Brandon's crazy adventures as we go around the world.
You know, give us money.
So, I mean, we really created hard packages that we can really help these businesses with. And we got, you know, businesses all across the country to fund the episodes so that they can get media, so they can get video produced, so they could be seen on, you know, national TV and, you know, different distribution outlets. So again, we didn't just create air, like just fund us and put us on TV. We created a real product and need in the marketplace. And then we went out and we sold it, like hard selling. I think that's the other part of it. We were on the phone 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So the campaign was live on Kickstarter for 25 days, pretty much 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Yeah.
If we were on the phone with each other, we were making a sale. Making a sale, picking up the phone and making a sale, picking up the phone and making a sale. It was really the hardest work that I'd ever done to make $25 sales, to make $100 sales, and then the $10,000 and $20,000 sales. Yeah. But I think you gotta put in the work. I mean, we're no better than anybody else on the other side of the camera.
We just put in the work and grind it on it. I mean, it was a lot of work for doing the crowdfunding. Yeah. Again, crowdfunding's not easy, but you have to put in the work. We raised $52,000 and now it's gonna allow us to raise more money. We've got a distribution deal and we're filming the episode, so.
Yeah. I think the one thing that I've noticed about you guys is no matter what the failures, fears, obstacles, objections, rejections, whatever it's going to be, you guys push through it. And one of my favorite quotes, I think from a mutual friend of ours, you guys probably know who he is, Joe Polish. I heard him say, successful people are moving scared. Unsuccessful people are frozen stiff. Do you guys think that that's true?
Yeah.
100%.
100%, man.
I think that at the end of the day, you know failures and mistakes are going to come in. And that's what cripples a lot of people from getting started.
I think if you're not scared, you're not growing. Like, I'm always growing out, going out of my comfort zone and growing and getting better because I want to do that crazy thing that people think you're crazy to do.
Yeah. I mean, so one thing, like, with startup culture now, people go out to Silicon Valley and they, like, almost like, I want to raise a couple million dollars so that we can fail. Like, I don't want to fail.
Yeah.
Like, I think failing's terrible. Like, it's a terrible feeling. But it is where the growth comes from. It's, you know, like I said, like, in St. Pete, like, it crushed me. I spent a lot of money filming a pilot episode on my own and I thought, oh, I'm this cool guy. I'm going to go film my own. It was terrible. Like, it was not good. But you learn so much from it, and you know, again, you got to be moving forward. So many people are just—they're scared. Like we talked about video in the first thing, and building a personal brand, they're scared to film themselves on camera. What the worst thing that can happen is you put it on YouTube and no one watches it.
Yeah.
You know, or you get one troll comment.
It's like the worst thing that can happen if you don't ask, you already got no, and if you do ask, you could just get no, and you're in the same place.
And the big thing is too, like you don't know where your direction is going to go. I mean, like I said, I invented a product called the Arctic Stick. It led me to podcasting, which led me to a TV show, which I would have never seen, but I just kept doing things and learning, and then eventually that overnight success came after years of hard work.
How are you guys using social media, whether it's for crowdfunding, whether it's for your personal branding?
Snapchat.
Whatever the platforms are, you can share that. I mean, we got newborn babies using their parents' phones to get on social media. We got old people trying to figure it out and everybody in between.
Yeah.
But just because there's a billion people on Facebook and on social media, I feel like a very, very, very small percent actually know how to use it properly. So what do you think are some of the ways you guys
talk a little bit about what we did in the Des Moines episode with Snapchat. I think that's really, really
so
huge.
Yeah, so Snapchat is big for me. BT Adams 18 if you haven't added me. But I think with Snapchat and everything else, people want to see you authentic and they want to see your story. I mean, Snapchat is like having your own reality TV show.
Yeah.
We did 150 snaps in 24 hours. But I created this awesome scene. We actually got on the Iowa State Snap Story, 30,000 views in 24 hours for free. But people see who you are, and when they trust you, they believe in you, they eventually buy from you. And honestly, from what we've done, Snapchat has been the best ROI for what I've done. It doesn't cost anything. It's just putting in the work and showing what you're doing and building that trust with your audience.
Yeah, but I think a lot of people, you know, just rely on social. So I'm not that old, but I'm a little older, and I'm very much, you know, a hard paper guy. Like, I still send physical newsletters to people. I send
personally
magazines
emails
to people,
yeah.
you know, things like that. And so we were with Jake Paul yesterday. He's on Disney. Disney. He's got 3 million plus Instagram followers. He's now on the Disney Channel, and now he's getting people who watch the Disney Channel who don't even know what Snapchat is. They don't know what Instagram is. And so it's a whole nother medium. And so I think with this TV show, we wanted to leverage both what's happening now with Facebook, with Instagram stories, with Snapchat, but also look at traditional distribution, because I still want to hit the 60-year-old CEO or business owner who might fund something or might bring me in to consult for their company. So I think you still need to merge some of the old media with the new media, because there's different audiences in different places. So you can't just solely be on Snapchat, but also you can't solely be on broadcast television. You need to find a way to merge the two. And I think that's the most exciting place for us, is that we're able to take kind of my, you know, direct marketing, DRTV experience with your kind of social media experience, and we get the best of both worlds.
You definitely don't want to just rely on one social media platform. You want to use all of them, and it's contextual, which is what I like that you brought that up. Co-hosts of Ambitious Adventures, Brandon T. Adams and Greg Roulette, are joining us. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars. What are some of the values that you guys have consciously chose to adopt into your life that have helped serve you in a professional or personal way? A lot of people have their values conditioned within themselves unconsciously from their environments, how they were raised, their parents, their friends, social media, the news. But I've noticed that what separates normal people, broke people, depressed people, sad people from happy, healthy, wealthy, successful people who have a big purpose-driven life is that they start to consciously choose their values, growth, contribution, integrity, whatever it may be. So what are some of the values you've chose that are serving you?
I mean, personally, in what we're doing with the TV show, it's all about adding value. Mm-hmm. Like, if I can add value to you and make your life better, you're gonna grow, you're gonna succeed, and that's for anything in business, whether you're selling something, you're doing TV, just add value to people, enhance their life, and you'll have success.
Yeah, I'm gonna say for me, it's family. So growing you know, a lot of successful business at the same time, obviously traveling here, every day that I'm in town, I'm home at 5 o'clock. Every single day. So I can be there for dinner. We can go outside in the front yard and play baseball. I got 2 young sons, a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old. This time we're filming this. Married my high school sweetheart. So family to me is everything. And why are we working so hard? Why are we building these empires if you can't be there to share it? So I'm writing a book right now called The Ambitious Dad, How to Take Over the World and Still Be Home in Time for Dinner. And so, you know, but it's really about the fact that you can have both. They're not mutually, you know, exclusive. There's so many people out there just hustle, hustle. If you're not working 24 hours a day, then, you know, you're not going to make it. Like, that's to me, that's not how you should live your life. You know, there needs to be some sort of reason why you're doing what you do. For me, it's family.
Well, how do you guys unplug? Because that's the perfect thing to transition into. A lot of times entrepreneurs, they don't know how to turn the brain off. I struggle with that too. How do you unplug?
I mean, we all struggle with it. I know you do too. Like, you just have to make that commitment, because you could look at your phone forever. But I mean, when you love what you do, you're enjoying it and it's addiction. Yeah. But for me, like, I just got to go to the gym, work out, or just have that little alone time. Yeah. But that's, you need that to be able to be more successful in business. You need your free time.
I mean, I force it into scheduling. So like I said, 5 to 8. So 5 to 8 is actually in my calendar every day of home with wife, with kids, with family.
Learned that
from,
the hard
from 5
way.
To 8. You learned that? You know, well, when we were doing the Kickstarter campaign, he called me at 6 o'clock and he's like, well, bro, why aren't you answering?
Kept calling.
Like, it's dinner time. Like, that is like a religious time, like, for our family. And so, but I think you have to schedule it. Like, if the gym's important to you and you're not going to the gym, it's because it's not in your schedule. So, you know, if you have to put it from 6 to 7, schedule it. Just like, you didn't miss a business meeting today. We didn't miss this interview today because it was in the calendar. So if the gym's important to you, eating healthy is important to you, your family time's important to you, you have to schedule it as if it was something for business. That's the only way, you know, these serial entrepreneurs can really disconnect.
I love that you said, you know, successful entrepreneurs, you guys included, you have to schedule fun time, you have to schedule family time. Most people, I feel like, that are unsuccessful, they're trying to, like we were saying, we have to force ourselves to unplug and have fun. They're trying to force themselves to work. For us, we have to force ourselves to do the opposite.
I know.
What's one of the craziest things or funniest things you guys have experienced so far in your entrepreneurial journey, either together with the show or separately?
What do you think?
Man, so there's a lot of good times. What? I mean,
he's already got one.
I got one. I mean,
I don't know where you were going. We were
on set. We were filling for Tres Mentes Salsa. And I ate like half a pepper.
So we got to set the scene. So
ghost peppers?
Like, legit, we just got into the kitchen. We're supposed to make salsa with these guys. And it's supposed to be like this, you know, 15, 20 minute scene. They haven't even like introduced their business yet.
Pick up the pepper, take a bite. And all of a sudden, like, I was on fire. Like, I started crying. I need a water.
Tearing up, water.
Ruined the whole scene.
Ruined the whole set, the whole shot.
I think it made it.
But. Yeah, I mean, there's parts of it that just totally made it. But no, it was... It was epic. I mean, I think what's interesting, even, you know, with what you guys are doing here, is it, we want to be informative, we want to add value, like Brandon said, but you have to have a little bit of an entertainment value. Mm-hmm. Is that we live in an infotainment world where you, if you're not entertaining at some level, like if you're not, if you're watching this right now and you're not like laughing at us, like we're two goofballs, like how do these two goofballs get a TV show?
Then you won't
show?
Remember us.
Then you're not, you know, it's not memorable. It has to be exciting. You have to tell stories. And so you have to add the entertainment value.
I definitely agree, guys. I wish we had more time. We got to wrap this up. Pleasure having
you
guys
on
the
show. Thank
you so much, man. We'll be jumping on your show right now.
Definitely. Yeah.
I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars, connecting a community of entrepreneurs. Join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.
And now, a Business Rockstars Minute. How can your startup see growth right away? I'm Pat O'Brien with the Business Rockstars Minute. While there is no true secret sauce to seeing success with your business immediately, here are a few ways you can put yourself on the right path. One, plan it all out. An idea without a plan is just an idea. Set short and long-term goals along the way. Two, know your customer. Can you provide great customer service as you grow? Three, hire the right people. Expanding your team with talented additions will help you delegate tasks as you grow. Four, have a little faith. Don't give up. Even with a plan, you'll need to adjust and fix the plan along the way. Identifying and fixing problems right away is the key to scaling quickly. Progress doesn't happen overnight, but if you have a plan, you're well on your way. I'm Pat O'Brien, and this has been a Business Rockstars Minute.
A new poll says more Americans approve of President Trump than they do the big media. That's why millions are tuning in to Newsmax TV, America's new conservative channel. On Newsmax TV, see Bill O'Reilly, Pat Buchanan, Alan Dershowitz, Mike Reagan, and more. Bill O'Reilly's No Spin News Show is on Newsmax TV. Get it on DirecTV Channel 349, Xfinity 1115, Dish 216, UVerse 1220, Fios 615, and Spectrum. Newsmax TV, real news for real people.
Hey, my friend's retail store was the victim of IoT password theft.
Yep. Cybercriminals are taking over security cameras, payment systems, and other IoT devices by exploiting vulnerabilities.
What if they target us and our dispersed network?
We're secured with Barracuda. We have advanced firewalls for our sites, enhanced security for our cloud infrastructure, and total email protection.
Such a relief.
Protect your business at Barracuda.com. Barracuda, your journey secured.
Freedom doesn't start in the White House. It starts in your house. Here's Helen Kriebel.
Most of us remember our childhood best friend. The bonds we develop early in life teach us the value of friendship, and many of those bonds last a lifetime. Yet there is a debate in many American schools about banning the very concept of best friends. Some say it is exclusionary and mean, that it leads to cliques for some while leaving others out. But the truth is that having good friends matters, and the ability to build relationships is vital to success. Schools cannot change human nature. Is it really their job to dictate social relationships or to worry about who likes whom? Kids need to make friends. That's healthy. And it's just not that...
Sign Agreement Club.
Rockstars.
Welcome back to Business Rockstars. Now let's go to Mark Lack.
We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Mark Lack, and this is Business Rockstars. This is the CEO Roundtable segment. Joining me are two rockstar CEOs. Who are you and what do you do? Give us your elevator pitch.
I'm Colleen Costello, president and co-founder of a company called Vital Vio. We're a healthcare company based in New York that focuses on at-risk indoor environments, utilizing white light LED disinfection. So we're able to actually safely and continuously disinfect environmental surfaces in places like hospitals, athletic facilities, pharmaceutical manufacturing, anywhere that there's a potential risk for transmission of dangerous germs.
Wow. Interesting. I'm excited to dive into more about what you do.
I'm Jason Nazar, and the co-founder and CEO of Comparably. It's a new website that helps people see how much they should be getting paid and lets them publicly rate their companies.
What excites you most about your guys' businesses? You know, sometimes I speak with CEOs and I may ask them that question and they're just not really passionate about what they do anymore. I can tell both of you are, or you want to be doing what you're doing. And so what inspires you and excites you most about what you're up to these days?
Myself, I got started in this business when my grandmother actually contracted a MRSA infection in a hospital, and noticed at the time that it is the number one patient killer, is people, you know, go into a hospital and end up worse off than they were when they entered. So what inspires and excites me is the ability to have a new method to try to address a really dangerous problem that really we have very limited tools right now in our arsenal to address. So every time we get to talk to a customer, it's exciting to be able to offer them a solution to something they're struggling with.
I love that. And like most entrepreneurs, you started this as a result of a need for something that happened in your own life. Mm-hmm. So I love that. What about for you, Jason?
I'm pretty excited about Colleen's business right now. We keep Purell everywhere in the office. There must be 50 bottles of Purell.
Yep. Well, it sounds like you need
one person gets sick, the entire office
is
done.
Yeah, that's what happens. Oh, no. Yep.
So I want to buy some of those lights.
I'm here.
I'm
here to do that.
Put them on everybody's desk.
We can do that.
Get a lamp version of the light.
We do. We have under cabinet, because actually, keyboards and mouses and everything on that entire workspace.
I find as I get older, I'm getting more OCD-ish. Like, I like washing my hands more. Is that
because the more you know, the more you're going to want to wash your hands. I guarantee that.
Save money on the Purell.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what excites you, though? You're saying you're excited about her business, which is great, but what excites you about your own business?
Yeah, I get excited about everybody's business. Well, our business is to understand other people's companies, so I think that's why it excites me. You know, we are trying to make workplace compensation culture dramatically more transparent, so, you know, we're building something that hopefully millions of employees and employers in both the U.S. and outside are going to use. And if we can empower employees and, you know, force companies to be a little bit more transparent to make them better and make them more rewarding for everybody, that's something I think, you know, we're pretty proud of and excited to do.
Yeah. I'm curious to know, how do you handle stress? And, you know, as a CEO, you're already like, whoo, that's a tough one, right? Yeah. It's like, how do you handle stress? I think regardless, now it's like an epidemic, right? People are like taking pills left and right for stress. People are going on diets to exercise plans to alleviate stress. Stress is like this common theme interwoven throughout everyone's life. Maybe it's not that much in your own life, but I'm sure we all know people who have so much stress. Maybe it's not that they have a lot of stress, but they're just not good at dealing with it. So how do you guys deal with the stress that comes along with the job of being an entrepreneur?
I think that's something I constantly am challenged with, trying to deal with the stress.
Right on your face when I said it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a challenging thing, especially I'm on the road a lot, so trying to do things in between everything. I mean, I find exercise, jogging, is a very simple technique for me to relieve stress. But I also think some of the mental components of trying to keep a peripheral vision of, you know, everything that you're working on and trying not to get too stressed out in some of the day-to-day. So constantly kind of taking a backward step and get some perspective and review the progress that you're making so that some of the day-to-day fire is putting out.
Some of the things that we do in our business, and there's a lot, but we invest back in the education of our employees, and we want to make sure that if there's a book, a program, an event, a seminar, a mastermind, a retreat, anything that's going to allow them to become a better version of themselves and acquire or strengthen the current knowledge and skill sets that they have, or acquire new knowledge and skill sets that'll help them get closer to the achievement of the goals of our company, we're going to reinvest back in the education of our employees. And that's something, being a consultant and a coach and a speaker and an author and somebody who comes from what we do is provide education, of course, we're going to preach what we do and we're going to invest back in education for our employees. And we've seen just incredible results as a result of investing in our employees, because if your employees come in and they're just the same people doing the same things for a year, I mean, that may work for some companies. For us, I want every month my employee to be smarter and I want them to be better. And so that's something that we pride ourselves on, is heavily reinvesting in the education of our own employees and our own staff. So let's think about what's a good thing that we could talk about for best practices or tools and gadgets. Do you guys have anything that you want to share in regards to some tools, gadgets, or resources that you use to be more productive, to be more efficient, to unplug, to be more organized, anything like that?
There's a couple things. So in my case, I think email is a huge killer of efficiency. And so I try to check email at certain checkpoints throughout the day and not be beholden to it, you know, for long periods of time. We did an experiment in our office recently. There's a method called the Pomodoro method, which says that, you know, we're really only efficient working in about 20-minute segments. So you work extremely concentrated for 20 minutes, and then you take a 5-minute break. And it was a little overkill. I actually had the entire team work for 10 hours straight in this method. So we'd work for, you know, about a little bit longer. We'd work half an hour, take a break, do a check-in with the entire team. Yeah. And you realize you're unbelievably productive. You know, it's a little taxing at first. But the idea is, and one thing I try to focus a team on, is there's a very small set of things that ever actually make a difference. So one of the things that I have us do for team efficiency is I ask our team at the start of every day, write down on a post-it note, the one most important thing you have to get done today. That's probably not a task, something you can get done in 10, 15 minutes. It's going to take a little longer. And odds are, if every day you do the one most important thing and nothing else, we'll still be further ahead than if we just did a whole bunch of stuff to do and you didn't get to that one most important thing.
I love that. It allows you to get dissipate and clear off the low-income, trivial activities that oftentimes are easier to get done. And so to feel more productive, we'll put those in front of the one thing we should do.
Yeah, think of it. Stuff to do. STDs. That's what she's in the business. Like, you're going to kill those with your lights, right?
All right. Yes, Colleen, take us home. This is the wrap here.
Well, I guess I can comment on some of the educational aspects that you're talking about of what we try to do for our team members. So our team's pretty young. Our average age is about 24. So, you know, maybe their first job or their first position out of school. So I try to make sure that everyone gets involved in different aspects of the business and that we try to educate them in a very well-rounded way.
I love that. You guys are both rock stars. This sums up the CEO Roundtable. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars, connecting a community of entrepreneurs. Join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.